Blog Talk Radio.
Those who are alive, because we're trying to stay existentially alive in Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, Torah instructions of kindness, Torah Rachm, instructions of mercies. You now turn into Blog Talk Radio, and we're trying to cross-pollinate tonight's audience, or this morning's audience, with TikTok Chick-Chock. I hope the audio will be sufficient for our TikTok Chick-Chock listeners to chime in. I see people are in. Blessed is our eternal creator, shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family condition. With the creator's help, our next broadcast will start on January 14th, which is right now, and it's now like 11:01 Eastern Standard Time from Turtle Island equals AKA equals the USA equals Unified Soul Actualization. An essential topic for discussion will be sharing the written and oral Torah traditions regarding King Solomon's Proverbs, one of the most powerful teachings from the Israelite Tanakh, Torah, prophets, holy writings. For those of you out in TikTok Chick-Chock land, you can call in if you want to make the show a little bit more organic at 563-999-3688. That's 563-999-3688. Meanwhile, the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. And this is the theme song from Exodus, a movie from the early 1960s. We'll just let it play out another 20 seconds or so. And we have on our line as well, soon to be brought in, for discussion, a Rambam teacher, activist, and disseminator of the teachings of the Nesher Gadol, Dennis Ryan. Just a couple more seconds, and then we'll get right on with the show. Okay, Dennis, good morning.
Focus on Don. How are you, and how is all our listeners today?
Well, we hope everyone is doing fine. We're actually trying to cross-pollinate our audiences. We've got about, 10, 15 people listening live on TikTok. We can do a live TikTok broadcast. As they can see, I'm drinking my chamomile and ginger and honey tea. And also, I want to mention that today's broadcast includes the following tags: Eternal Creator, Universal Redemption, Divine Image, Children of Israel, working with children of Noah to remove hatred, jealousy, and competition from this world, written and oral traditions of Israel. The good news is, once again, we haven't been disappointed yet from the divine blessings, is that for every person that has passed on today, this is a kinetic count, which you can find on worldometer.info/world-population/, that every person passing on to the next level of life, two people are being born. And we're now at a kinetic count of 8,085,000,000. We're less than 14 million away till 8,800,100,000,000 people, which is very wondrous, in despite the fact that there are social pundits and social engineers who want to try to promote the idea that there are too many people on the earth. Well, apparently from above in the heavenly realms, they're saying that's not true. And I just also want to point out that as far as our listening audience today, we have from our prior listening audience on Blog Talk Radio, almost 84% of our listening audience is in the United States. And then there's a four-way tie: Israel at 2.61%, Canada 2.16%, Australia 2.16%, France at 2.61%. Then we have Italy, which is less than 1%, and Germany is 1.74%. So Dennis, this is the first time we're going to broadcast simultaneously on TikTok, so hopefully this will widen out the dialogue. And also, we want to be talking about later in the program, at the conclusion of today's program, about a great man Well, actually, there's a national holiday named after him, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So before we even get started, any reflections? I was almost 6 years old when he was assassinated, unfortunately. I remember riding in a car with my mother from Ridgewood, New Jersey, going to where we lived in Paramus, New Jersey, coming out of a doctor's appointment. But I really didn't know anything more than that. Can you reflect about, you know, you're old enough to remember the early 60s up until the time of his evil assassination. Give us, our audience, a little, you know, to create the atmosphere of today's program of recollecting a great one and also gratitude for having the opportunity to do so.
Well, he was a force at the time, and the force was backed up by the media. And since he was a black man, and he was so well spoken, they gave him the spotlight. Nothing wrong with that. The problem was there was nothing to offset that in the white world. In other words, we have Martin Luther King Jr. in the black world, but we didn't have anybody in the white world that could come together and speak about black and white issues can be addressed and handled. So it was like one-sided. But the media went crazy over it. Nothing wrong with that. But the only thing I felt bad about it was, how come it was so one-sided? Like, there was only one story to be told, and that was from the black side, because that's what Martin Luther King was preaching. Nothing wrong with that. But why wasn't there somebody on the other side of the fence to speak up so we had a balanced viewpoint and we could get issues and we could address items that we all could live with? So I thought it was a great time for a lot of different people to get together, but none of them did. And they just kept pushing the black viewpoint, which I didn't find anything wrong in it, but it was out of balance. So one holiday left, but there was nobody on the white side saying, why can't we all come together? A shame, but that was our chance to get together. But the media sort of disturbed it by pushing one side.
That's stuff that I was not really privy of because I was just a little boy. I will mention another group of brave young men, African-American, the Tuskegee Air Unit that fought in World War II. I think they went into the air in 1944. They used to escape the bombers into Italy and other parts of that part of the world during World War II towards the conclusion of the war. And I saw an interview with one of the soldiers, the Air Force pilots, and he said something that was very, very interesting. I'd like you to comment on this, Dennis. He mentioned that despite the fact that there was tremendous racism against the African-American people at the time before World War II, and they were basically, when those who were brought into the Army, they were given menial jobs. And then FDR was convinced and actually signed into some sort of legislation or enactment to allow them to join the Tuskegee Air Force. And this African-American airplane pilot said, what was done was, although we were made to feel separate at one level, when it came to the standards of learning how to fly a plane and to be combat ready, the American Army did not lower the standards for us. He said that was the best thing they could have done for us. So my question for you, Dennis, is this, is that there has been a considerable talk about lowering standards or abandoning standards, but certain standards really never go away, meaning the effort of a human being to try to actualize the potential is something that is equal no matter what background a person is coming from. Now, there could be other social factors. It could be a one-parent family. It could be a no-parent family, a person living in a foster home situation, which is a very rough situation. They could be adopted, whatever it may be. But that's your take on this, on how it would behoove this country to try to rebuild itself by maintaining standards for everyone, and for those who need a little more help in terms of like tutoring or at their level, so eventually they can meet the standards that we all met. I mean, when I went to high school, there was one standard. You have to apply yourself. And if you didn't apply yourself, you failed. And I saw when I applied myself, I succeeded. When I didn't apply myself, for whatever reasons, I didn't do so well in class. But in terms of life as well, Dennis, how can we encourage people that there has to be standards that are uniform to allow every person to tap into their deep human potential?
God has given us all the same potential. Question is, are you going to hide behind standards to hold certain groups down from getting ahead or keeping up with the general public to a certain extent? We have constantly used standards as an excuse to say certain people can be excluded because they don't have the standards. Well, being entirely fair, when God created all of us, he did not create different humans in different tribes. He created humans across the board one way. We all have the same physical attributes that humans have. So why would some humans be treated as subhumans because they don't have standards? Now, who created the standards? What were the standards for? We should have had standards for all children so that they would all be recognized as working toward something called adulthood. Deprived a lot of different people because they belong to different tribes, and we didn't really want them to get ahead because it was bad publicity. Yet we say one thing and we practice another. This went on for a long time, and we still today don't know how to undo that condition of saying one thing and practicing another. It's almost like you're ducking the issue you don't want to face. But what's wrong? We're missing a national dialogue as to why the different tribes or races should come together. Why we have so much in common. You're taking the obvious thing of color alone to say there's a difference. I remember that there used to be little rhymes when I was a kid. White people would say as to why black people are not equal. I thought that was cute. It was like a nursery rhyme, but it was completely meaningless and wrong. But yet, it sounded good to kids' ears. So the media was playing up to the difference when, in effect, it should have been playing up to what do we have in common. They have as many diseases as we have. They and we are the same group. They are called humans. Oh, well, we have different groups. Matter of fact, at one time when I was growing up, people used to think it was a bad thing if you were left-handed. Terrible. It meant you were invested in the devil because you were left-handed. And it was preached in a lot of religious places that if you were left-handed, you were a friend of the devil. They didn't care who you were. You were left-handed. But being left-handed, what's the difference if you're right-handed or left-handed? But that was a difference. And this is what we were hiding behind, the standards or differences. And as long as we keep emphasizing that, the further apart we'll be. We don't have differences. We call them differences. We call them, but we have more in common than people believe. And there's humans all over the world that have something in common. And it shouldn't be that because your ancestors spent too much time in the sun, that's a big, big difference. We have people that say those markings, left-handed or right-handed, tell us the real story of what's going on. Baloney. If you want an excuse to say there's a difference, you can come up with an excuse any time you want. But if you want to say, what is the commonality among all humans, that's a different story. But somehow people don't want to say that. They want to say, oh, you think differently. You speak differently. You eat differently. Really? No, God made us all equal. We must understand that. And if we don't understand the equality of human nature, are we leading to its destruction? Yes, the birth figures show that we're producing more people than people who are dying. But I believe that's the hand of God to make sure the human race continues, can always find them. It's
right.
Much harder to find what is common and agree on commonality. Yet, logic says commonality should be the top subject. But we have people who just don't want to give up differences no matter what. I mean.
Okay. Dennis, we have someone calling. It might be Rob Walker. Let's see who this is. He's been waiting patiently for the last almost 5 minutes. Let's see who it is. Caller, can you identify yourself? But I think I might know who it is.
Hey, how you doing this morning, gentlemen? Rob Walker.
Rob, wow. It's been a long
time. Hi, Rob.
Been a long
hey,
time.
Hey, Dennis. Hey, Don.
Hi.
How you doing?
Have you been hearing what we've been discussing, Rob?
I just caught what Dennis was saying. I just jumped on it in the last 5 minutes. I heard what Dennis was saying about differences and commonalities. I caught that part.
Okay, so at the end of the program, we plan to play I Have a Dream speech by Dr. Martin Luther King. He was a great man.
Yes.
And also I combine that with, I was aware of it, but I learned a little bit more about the Tuskegee Air Force that was fought in World War II. I think around 1954 they started escorting bombers into Italy and that part of the world for the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the airplane pilots mentioned who was in training said that although there was racism because the African Americans were given menial jobs in the American Army, FDR was convinced to sign off on some sort of edict or whatever proclamation that they could join the Air Force. And this Air Force
mm-hmm.
pilot said one of the things that was done was that they did not lower their standards for them. And you think that was the greatest thing they could have done, is that not lowering the standards, and they became top flight, you know, they were an integral part of that part of the end of World War II. So, you know, that we're talking about this idea
mm-hmm.
of standards. And how, unfortunately, today people want to lower standards. Now, there could be other social factors involved because of people being in economic situations which do not preclude them, which preclude them from getting the proper nutrition or, say, like the proper family upbringing, one-family homes and everything, which does have an effect.
Uh-huh.
I mean, statistics do show that, you know, many people brought up in one family, one parent or no parent families or adopted and so or in, I've seen it myself, living in foster homes, it's a tough way to start out in life.
Right.
But a human being has to know that, you know, they were not given something more than they can handle, as much as difficult as it might be, as hurtful might be not to grow up with both parents in one house. I was fortunate enough to that.
Mm-hmm.
I know himself was orphaned at an early age, and he finds family and his grandchildren. Dennis, you have great-grandchildren? I forgot.
No, not quite. Not quite.
Okay, one day. So, Rob, your take on these matters, and then we're going to be talking about some biblical events on the matters of standards and how people should be kept to certain standards, and if we just erase standards
mm.
and we come up with other sort of engineering, it leads to, I think, some of the
decay
we're observing today in society. Mm.
Well, good morning, first of all, to everyone. It has been quite some time, and good to hear both of you gentlemen's voices. Hello to all the listeners that are still following and still loving this beautiful show. So I'll just jump right in. I mean, well, first of all, you know, I am one of five children raised in a single-parent home. My mother's from Jamaica. Yeah, I know, Don, you have an affinity with all things Jamaica and music and things of that nature. So you understand the culture in some respect. I was raised in a lax or loose household, raised in a very strict and powerful household. My grandparents were involved on a large degree because my father left when I was about 11. But my mother didn't lower any standards of anything. In fact, the bar was raised to see to it that we did the best we could academically, that we were treated in a way that we saw the power and the potential of who we were and could be. She didn't spare the rod at any point during our upbringing. My mother was probably a faster right hook than Muhammad Ali, and she made no apologies for it. It was a combination between Sugar Ray and Muhammad Ali, I know that. But I tell you that today I thank her and I bless her in the name of Jesus, because I know if it had not been for her strict and steadfast ways, I would not be on this phone talking to anybody. We live in a society that obviously and openly, purposely makes the playing field unlevel and unequal for many different cultures and other diasporas. Whether it's just you to be a Jew or a Gentile or a Buddhist, whatever it is, there are things that are in place that are set there purposely, have been set there hundreds and hundreds of years ago and by people that had wicked hearts and wicked minds and wicked intentions, and with the intention of hoping that certain people would never come to their full potential, certain cultures would never see what they were supposed to do under the power of God. But God has other plans. And so with all of the loss from Holocaust to slavery to genocide, we see that people continue to do well and continue to rise. We can't make excuses for ourselves in the face of difficult circumstances. Yes, there are people that go to bed hungry. There are people that are in unsafe conditions, raised in foster care. I mean, the list goes on. There are people who live in countries where they have great ambition, but there are no jobs. There's no water. There's no housing. So I always tell my wife, I said, listen, you can have the best education in terms of how you are reared, but if there are no opportunities or there's no one seeking for you and you can't build it on your own and you have no support, it's very difficult to be heard or to reach your full potential, and then depending on your geographic location as well. America has cornered the market on opportunities. You can do pretty much whatever you want here, but then racism is still very much alive in America, and it's not going to go anywhere because racism is the face of human beings. It's embedded in the culture. Not for everyone, obviously, but there are people that are just really dead set on keeping it that way. They know full well that to be black doesn't mean you're lesser or to be whatever you're lesser, but that's what they need to justify either their circumstances that they didn't achieve what they needed to achieve, or they need somebody to point the finger at, or they need somebody to scapegoat. And so, Don, you being a Jewish man, you understand, you know, how people can be scapegoated to their detriment. I'm familiar with it as well. But all we can do moving forward, and as you mentioned Dr. King, is to look ahead to the future and let our actions reflect that which we want to see the future look like. That's all we really can do, and stand shoulder to shoulder with our brothers. And not make excuses, and not be short-tempered, and not be, you know, but be as loving and as kind and compassionate and open to change as possible. I mean, that in itself is the only way anything's going to happen. You know, 50 years from now, most of the people that are here will be dead, and unless you're just born. So if you're a middle-aged individual, 50 years from now, you're gone, more than likely, or you're 100 years old if you make it, depending on where you are chronologically. So it's incumbent upon us while we have time to do the right thing and not be swayed or disturbed by people that are setting things in place to distract you or derail you or detour you in a direction that is not prominent. As you mentioned, the Tuskegee Airmen, my son served in the Air Force, and when he took his test, he scored in the top 5th percentile. He didn't go to any elite high school or elite middle schools. He went to public school. He's just very very well educated, and I put the time in. I didn't have a lot of money. And there are things I didn't have. I just had myself and my faith in God and my desire to teach my children, and it all works out. So I'll end on that point, but I just want to say that people are the solution. People are the solution. when you think about justice and you see the statue of the woman with the blindfold on. That statue is a beautiful statue. If only the courtroom was reflective of that statue. The person sitting on the bench can see. The 12 persons sitting in the box can see. The person defending or prosecuting can see. And they all have come to that place with teachings and preconceived notions and ideologies that they've been taught since birth. So it's very difficult to separate a person from those things. It has to be intentionally done. The person, he or she, has to want to be different and want things to change. If not, the person will be guilty based on the color of their skin, or they'll be innocent based on the color of their skin, or they'll serve more time based on the color of their skin, or they'll serve no time based on the color of their skin. It is not a double standard. It's a quadruple standard. It's beyond words. It's beyond numbers. So we have to fight to get past that place, and hopefully we'll get there eventually. That's all.
Beautiful. Okay, we're going to now, I'm glad that we've extended the dialogue. These are very human discussions. We're going to go into a book which I started, Rob, last week. I started sharing some ideas. It's a very nice book. And by the way, Rob, we're also cross-pollinating into TikTok world as we're doing this live broadcast on Blog Talk Radio to enlarge our audience. This is a book called, they can see it on TikTok, it's called The Garden of Gratitude. It's written in English by Rabbi Shalom Arush. And this book is about how we have to get ourselves into a mindset of gratitude to the Almighty. And he mentions 10 historical occurrences, and some of them we're actively observing until this day, actually all of them at some level, if not physically, spiritually. But we don't have time to go into all 10, so we'll try 3 right now, and then we'll get feedback from you, Rob, and then Dennis. And we'll go, the next subject will be Dennis and then Rob, and then the third one, Rob and Dennis, whatever. So the first thing we should recall, not just for the nation of Israel, is to recall the exodus from Egypt, that there was a loving kindness that the Almighty did for the nation of Israel that redeemed us out of Egypt. And he split the Red Sea for us, and he provided for us protection in the desert. But I want to mention that Egypt in English, means Mitzrayim in Hebrew. But Mitzrayim means constraints, meaning not just for the Jewish people, but for all people. We have to realize at some point in our life, the Almighty is taking us out of our own personal restrictions and those things which constrict our consciousness. And we have to give thanks for the fact that all of a sudden, like, wow, I never thought of something this way, or I never thought I could do something this way. I was born with a paralyzed left arm. Eventually, I learned through various forms of OT and PT, and just growing up in a neighborhood where the culture was sports, and I caught my first baseball with my left hand. You can see I'm moving my, you can TikTok where you can see I'm moving my fingers. But when I was born, I couldn't do that. So I myself have gratitude not just for the exodus from Egypt, but the fact that we are sometimes put in certain constraints. Excuse me. We can leave those constraints, and therefore when we are able to break out of our constraints, we should be thankful to God. Rob, your take on these matters. Rob?
Yes. I hear you. Can you hear me?
Any comments? Yeah, speak.
Yeah, hello?
Yes, I hear you.
Hello?
Clearly.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, no, I muted it while you were talking. I didn't want any background noise. Yeah, Dennis is talking about being born right-handed or left-handed, and I'm left-handed. So I thought that was pretty interesting that he mentioned how people view, how you're born and who you're born to and what your abilities are or your lack thereof. And no one can control how the Almighty designs them and sends them here. In the book of Jeremiah, he says, I knew you when you were in your mother's womb. So obviously, before mom and dad knew that you were sitting in there, or I was sitting in there, he shaped you in a very particular way. And he created this obstacle that would also alter and shape your state of mind and change your fortitude about things, man. So it's nothing is a mistake, nothing is an accident. Sometimes I think we think that they're accidents based on our personal proclivities, but society also puts obstacles in place for people that are different. oh, look at his arm. He can't move his arm. He's a cripple. Oh, he's strange. Oh, he's different. You can get bullied and teased, and depending on, you know, what culture you're in and what school you go to. But, you know, these things are put in place to make you stronger. God, there's nothing, even the Red Sea was put in place so that people had to realize the power of God. Like, there are no accidents. There's no mistakes. And of course, it forces you to be grateful. You have no choice. And you realize that the power is not completely in your head. It forces you to be grateful for every ounce of everything, and also that you have to lean on God and not yourself. Lean not to your own understanding. And that is what God is trying to get us to do, is not to lean to what, you know, some of what we've been taught or what you saw on you know, CNN or MSNBC, or even in our places of worship, we hear things sometimes that may not line up with truth, because not everybody that comes to worship has a deeper understanding. You might be in a superior place in some respect in your spiritual walk, and God is taking you there. And it's not a matter of your level of prominence in your community or level of stature in your place of business or worship, but it's just what God has done for you intimately and has put you in a place where you can see things that others may overlook. So it should humble you and make you grateful. You know, that's kind of how I look at it, man. So, you know, nothing is an accident. Even though the worst thing that will ever happen is still not an accident, because God is aware of it. And at any point in time, he can fix it, change it, alter it, do away with it, or make it worse. He has complete control, you know, and people say, well, let's pray. Remember, when you pray, you're still praying to him, and he still has the final word. So, you know, it's really about how he sees it. We have to just, as Moses said, be still and see the salvation of the Lord. So that's it.
Okay. Dennis, your take on this idea of going out of our boundaries. In the biblical narrative, it was going out of Egypt, but every person has their own personal Egypt. And why do people feel like sometimes they're stuck in their own sense of constriction? And what can we do to encourage them to walk forward? And don't be surprised when that allegorical Red Sea will part before you, so you can cross to the new level of awareness.
Well, the exodus out of Egypt was there for a reason. And that was that if you weren't an Egyptian, you were lower class. You didn't meet the standards. So a lot of people said, well, why are we living here? Why don't we go someplace else? And that's what they did. They had to physically remove themselves because the oppression was a little too much. They were treated as lower class citizens who had no rights because they weren't Egyptian. And even if they were Egyptian, but they were Jewish, they were now marked as lower class type of people. So the exodus out of Egypt was for cause. And that is, humanity said, well, we all can't exist here. There must be someplace else we can go. And thank God there was. Matter of fact, God, by parting the seas and making sure that they escaped the Egyptian control, they were able to restart in a different place. God bless them all. But that was rare. But you take the Tuskegee Airmen. I had a friend of mine who retired from them. And he was a very old man, and we used to talk about it all the time. And when it first started, these poor people who were so-called airmen were treated as porters. They weren't given the rank of officers in the Air Force. Well, it was the Army then. There was no Air Force. It was only Army. So the Army had an Air Force extension of in their organization. But they weren't treated as equals at all. Yet they had to scrounge, and they did, and they finally became heroic. So much so they got the name of Red Tails, which is actually recorded combat heroics. Officially recorded by the U.S. government. And Red Tails meant that they protected the bombers going over into Europe and dropping the bombs on Germany. So these people, poor people, had to scrounge their way and finally become officers in the U.S. Army. And it took the Army a while to recognize them, but these were trained pilots who were doing their duty for America. And they were doing it for all Americans. They weren't doing it for their tribe or their grouping. They were fighting for all Americans. Some people sometimes forget that. And they were giving up their lives for people on the other side of the fence. And yet, the fence was still a separating portion of humanity. Why in God's name were they doing this? They were freely giving up their lives so that others could survive and have a better life. What more can you do than to help out your fellow human being? And that's what they did. But they were treated very, very poorly, and it took them a while to establish themselves as equals in the air. On the ground, they were nobody. In the air, they were equals. So did they have to fly planes to become equals? Yes. Unfortunately, but this is how the ball bounces. Now, at 10 years old, I was an orphan, and I had to live in orphanages that had many different types of people there. And if you didn't get along, you were getting into trouble. So you had to get along to live your life. I was lucky. I got scholarships for this, that, and the other thing. So I was on an easier street than most of the other people, but I felt bad for some of them who were really good people, but they just couldn't get a scholarship. So you're treated as lower class if you can't meet the standards. But the standards weren't known. All they wanted to say, can you do better? But they wouldn't explain you couldn't do better if you belong to different groups. So automatically you were labeled because you belonged to different groups. Therefore, you weren't allowed to participate to get into the other groups. So the groupings that occurred...
I want to interject. Isn't it, and I hear everything you're saying, but if we're being honest, isn't some of this still... reflective of our society today? I mean, if we look at what's going on in the public school system, if we look at, the various entities of job and, equal pay for equal work, if we look at housing, if we look at, several different things. I mean, you're talking about a time when,
What do you mean several? Different things.
Several areas of our society still have an antiquated way of treating people from different diasporas. I think that we've come some way, but in regards to what we are, having your inalienable rights, what Dr. King says about having your inalienable rights, I mean, from birth, you should be treated. I'm of the mindset as I get older, and I've tolerated a lot of racism from people, indirect and direct, whether it be from job opportunities or career opportunities, or where I can live and where I can't live. And still in today, there are places where people of color can't buy a house. People of color can't buy a house, man. They can't move in certain areas because the people will destroy their homes or they're not wanted there, or they're still country clubs, or they're still, I mean, the mindset and some of the stuff is still being passed down, bro. So it really is for me, like, so if to be born, with money, it's a different thing than being born without money. To be born one color is still a thing. We're still fighting for this stuff. You got down in Florida, Governor DeSantis wants to take books off the shelves because he says these books should be banned. How can one person tell a whole society of people what books to be banned? And how can someone tell people what should be stricken from history if it happened? How can you perpetrate crimes against people, grievous crimes, murders, lynchings, you know, fire hose, beating, stealing people's land, raping their children, and you say, let's not talk about that anymore. That's outrageous. That is completely outrageous. You know, my Jewish brothers and I, we have these discussions all the time, and they're like, God forbid they would ever try to erase the Holocaust. They're not, it's not going to happen. It should never happen. People need to be reminded of what they've done, and not that we need to live in it and just kind of rehash it for the sake of argument, but rehash it and let it stand as a banner so people say, this must never happen again, and if it's happening, we need to take measures and precautions that we make sure that it doesn't happen. You know, to teach in school that your kid was a slave. No, well, you're a king and a queen in your country that was made into a slave in another place. Tell them to tell people the truth. It's not to indict anybody who's here now because you didn't do it, but this is the story. This is my story. And your story basically dictates who you become. And so to remove any part of the story is to become a different individual. And it's not to acknowledge who you really were. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I'm not everything you're saying is right on par, but our society has a way to go. And it's justice system, it's education system, it's work system, it's housing system. It's so many disparities. And unfortunately, you know, people think, oh, it's just black people. No, it's everybody, man. It's everybody suffering. Some people just don't talk about it, but it's happening still. And we have to do something that makes it clear that we are one, like you said earlier, we're one people, human beings. Hue means color. We're all different colors and shades like flowers in a garden. But we all deserve to be treated equally, loved equally, and share in the things that God has made available to us. And I think that we're still struggling to make that clear universally. We're struggling. Look at Africa. Look what's happening in Africa. Yeah. So it's tough.
Well,
tough. That's all. I mean,
Let's put it this way, Rob. People don't want to hear the truth.
Yes.
They don't want to
mm-hmm.
hear the truth. Very hard to have a truthful conversation. Very, very
right.
hard. But as long as
our
human way of life is based on differences, will we ever have
right.
commonality?
Right.
We all share
the same stuff. Right.
We need the commonality so we can
right.
be one group as humans. But we have people who believe
right.
in differences. And they believe those differences are more important than anything else, but they don't want to talk about it.
Well, it serves to benefit economically and socially one group and to keep things in a certain place. Because if you talk about it, then you have to address it. And if you address it, now everyone's talking about it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they don't want to discuss because they mean they're going to have to actually do something which will take away the comfort level of the benefits that they've had that other people don't have. Which is absolutely absurd. And so
you're bypassing humanity to an extent, Rod. And that is
okay.
humans must face their problems. They can't ignore them. They can't substitute
right.
them. They can't use
right.
different reasons to say, I don't want to talk
right.
about that. You must face your problems. If you don't face your problems, do you think your problems are going to get better? No, that's the old
absolutely not.
Concept.
No.
That's the old concept of the ostrich effect. Go stick your head
right.
in the sand, and your problems will go away. We can't do that anymore. Yet we actually have people who go about it as though that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
What is normal?
Well, that's my point. My point is that, you know, like I said, I mean, I've been black for 54 years. You know what I'm saying? I don't know any other color that I've been unless I'm an alien and I change. What I'm saying is that I got a front row seat at a lot of stuff that's happening. Growing up in Brooklyn, they would have you think that the Jewish community and the Christian community don't love each other or they have differences. No, they don't. They're right down the block. We've never had any, you know, we have had one hiccup in all of the years I've been living in Brooklyn. Based on one situation. But other than that, we've been living in harmony for many, many years. But if you read the paper, you'll hear something different. It's almost like we're pitted against each other to cause this harmony. so that somebody can benefit economically off of it. Because but it does little to serve the greater good of the community. But is the greater good of the community what is that what's wanted, really? You know, is the question.
Is harmony
hiding the truth?
Is harmony the truth? Is harmony the truth?
Right.
You even backed up when I brought that subject up. What it is, you have to undo a whole bunch of things that has occurred in history if you want to clean the slate. Can we clean the slate? Should we even try? Why can't we minimize our differences and deal with the truth? We can do it if we want
to.
No
one's willing to give up.
I want to interject that it's going to take a lot of hearing acuity. I mean, people have to become better listeners, because if they become better listeners, they become better understanders of the situation. And they might not agree, but at least they can understand. So part of the table of human dialogue is just a common understanding of what has transpired. And a lot of people like Dennis, they don't want to hear this truth, they don't want this type of... But I kind of feel like we've reached a certain point where I want to move on, because there are two more subject matters. We can continue this conversation at the beginning of next week's program as well, God willing.
Yes.
And we're going to Daniel.
Yeah.
And Rob, just to bring you up to speed, we've been learning in the chapter 2 of the book of Daniel how Nebuchadnezzar had a dream and he forgot it, and he tried to employ his wise men, known as the Chaldeans, who were known as mind readers, and they said, and he basically told them, if you cannot tell me what my dream was, that you're all going to be killed. And they tried to tell us what it's about, and this angered him, and he decided he's going to have all of his wise men killed, which would also include Daniel and his companions, who are Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And we're going to go now into chapter 2, verse 17. Daniel then went home and told his companions, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, the story, and these were all members of the tribe of Judah that were taken into captivity after the destruction after the destruction of the temple. And Ibn Ezra mentions that Daniel had to seclude himself for the revelation of prophecy, because he realized that the only way he would be able to understand what the dream of Nebuchadnezzar was to seclude oneself. Prophets must seclude themselves to get their mind in a state of seclusion. And also by him telling his companions, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, that they also should pray, and this is the point I want to bring out for Peter and both of you, we have left, because the power of collective prayer transcends individual prayer. The prayer of the many is sometimes, it is written in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 7, who is like our Creator, our God, in all our calling out to Him. And the Malbim says that again, not just that they should pray for Daniel to get the prophecy, but that they should also pray for themselves to be secluded for prophecy. And I just want to mention, I've mentioned this several times on this program in different contexts. In 1993, I think it was, there was a defensive tackle, a defensive end for the New York Jets by the name of Dennis Byrd, who actually ran into his own teammate and became paralyzed. It was a question if he would not just only survive, but be able to walk again. White to him, and he actually was able to walk again. I mean, he never was able to play football again, but he was able to give living testimony of the power of prayer. So, Rob, this idea of preparing for prophecy and how it can be an effective measure when we get more people to pray for the same thing, which I'm praying for, that all human beings pray for the revelation of God's attribute of shalom, of peace, in order to end all conflict all over the four corners of the globe. You may say this is dreaming, but here we see from the prophetic teachings of Israel that prayer in numbers does have an effect, because it's a divine image with another divine image, we have the collective energy of divine images praying for peace in the particular instance I'm giving, or in this case here, that Daniel or even his companion should be able to understand the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, to interpret properly, to turn down his anger. They shouldn't kill not just the sages of the Babylonians, but also Daniel and his friends were also considered the sages of those days.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I said earlier, prayer is important. In fact, my wife and I were having a great conversation last night about the power of prayer. And people always say, oh, this is never going to happen, or I guess it's over now, or whatever. And so they basically concluded that there's no way out, and that's absolutely not the truth. Individual prayer versus corporate prayer. And as you said, we have to isolate ourselves at times so we can hear God's voice without any background noise or any other intrusions. And so what you remember also about that story is that when they were preparing themselves, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, they changed their diet. So they didn't even eat the things that everyone else was eating. They didn't drink wine. They didn't eat the food. They drank water, and they had vegetation for 10 days. And so the preparation for prayer is also, it's detoxing. Detoxing of television, detoxing of the radio, detoxing of touching anything that is going to sway your, put a version in your mind that's going to obstruct God's conversation with you. Sometimes you may read something, and you may think this is the thing, and then when God is telling you something different, but I read something different. So you don't want any blockages in your food and in your environment, and that little create a space in your house or your room so that you can do these things. But to your point, yes, I think that we have to really be still and know that when in being still and hearkening to God's commands and being and opening your heart and your mind to hearing what He has to say, the answers will come. I don't think men do that too much nowadays. I think that they hear their own voice, and they can their focus is on the materialism and the things that they can see and touch and how it's going to advantage them by doing what they want. And they may even hear God's voice, because I can't say that they do not, but do they hearken to it is the question. So in trying to make things right, prayer and reverence to God is key. It is key. It's short and sweet. There's nothing else you need to do besides quiet down, power down, and put it all on the table and not leave it to your own interpretation. Don't try to reinterpret it once He's given you the message or the information, because it doesn't align with what you thought it should be. You try to change it, because in this situation with Daniel and the sorcerers and all these other people, it would cost them their lives. And much like when you just to kind of jump into a part of it, when you talk about that with Joseph, when Joseph was in prison and Joseph was interpreting dreams and stuff like that, and he told one guy that you're going to be fine, so the other guy, they're going to hang you, So it's like when you let God use you as a vessel, the information will come through clearly. And when you have your own desires and you say you're doing this for God, but you're doing it for yourself, then you leave yourself open to be destroyed, which is what King Nebuchadnezzar could have done with those other people, because, our God wasn't their God. Their God was sorcery and all types of other things, and so they didn't really lean to the God of Abraham. So it's a different conversation, and that's what I have to say about that.
Okay. Dennis, any take on these matters?
Yes. We have never really practiced collective thinking, collective prayer. People have tried it at different places at different times, but we, for some reason, don't accept that as a thing of humanity. Humans all think way. Can we all accept it? Or do we have to go back to differences? If we keep going back to differences, then we have a real problem. The one thing that we all know, even though it may have been voiced already on this program, is that people are hearing different things, yet we all have the same ears. God gave every one of us the same ears with the same power to hear. If you don't want to listen, that's your choice. But you cannot use it as an excuse. Oh, I didn't hear that. Oh, I don't know what they meant. You cannot hide behind your ears. They're part of your head. God has given us all the same ears with the same power to work, to understand, and to know what's going on. If you want to ignore the facts because you don't want to talk about the truth, that's your choice. suicide. Don't blame it on anybody else other than you. So the power of collective thinking, understanding, and prayer has yet to be understood. We all say it's a positive thing, but if we look at the length of history, has there been that much change? We're still emphasizing what the differences are.
Exactly.
And we keep on going through history. Long after we're gone, we're going to have people talking about the differences when they should be talking about what we have in common. I mean.
Dennis, may I ask you a question? That's beautifully said. So in your estimation, what should be removed or added? Because remember, we come from different backgrounds, different cultures, different religions. What would you say would be a partial solution or something that could put us on the road to recovery so that we can begin to really hear each other? Think is blocking us from hearing each other.
We must accept everything. We don't throw anything away. We don't use stupid rules of saying this is good, this is bad. We don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
Our ears don't stop working. You cannot shut good ideas or any ideas from going into our ears. There's no filter in our ears, and they're attached to our brain. So we cannot go around saying, this is good, this is bad, when there's no moral aspect to it. We somehow transfer the moral aspect to ordinary things in life. We cannot do that. We must accept what is God-given and keep on going with that. We are one species called humans. God didn't create all the different species of humans. He created one called humanity. If you can't accept humanity, then what are you looking for? If your ears don't want to hear everything, then why are you gearing your ears to only hear certain things? Why are we living with differences are more important than life? When in effect life says everything that God has created is good and it is for all humans. Amen.
Okay, gentlemen, we want to end up, we're going to extend a little bit over the hour. We can do that. Thank God. Chapter 3 in Proverbs, that the Torah is described, or the scripture, which also includes the written and the oral traditions of Israel. It is a tree of life for those who grasp it, and those who draw near it are fortunate. But what I want to comment, based on the oral Torah commentaries on the following verses, the Lord, the Creator, founded the earth with wisdom and established the heavens with discernment. What's going on here? That according to Genesis Rabbah, which is something called the Midrash, not that the Creator had to, but the Creator freely chose to use a type of plan, which is the Torah. Now, in this Torah, looked into it, and again, the Creator was not obligated, but he chose to do so, because I think the instruction is that the Almighty wants us to have a plan. How do we develop ourselves? How do we develop this world? So he looked into the Torah and he created the world. The Torah, so to speak, was the blueprint. Not the Creator needed a blueprint, but again, he exemplified to us at a level that we can understand. We need a blueprint for our lives. And that Genesis Rabbah says that there is a blessing connected to the fact that the world was created from the perspective of a divine plan. Now the Malbim, another great commentator, mentions in a parallel area this verse and says that you look at the earth represents a certain foundation. The heavens represent the ceiling way above the foundation. The depths of the earth represent the source of blessing and plenty for the earth. Therefore, the truth of the matter is the earth, which was created from absolute nothing, I mean, the Creator was not compelled to make the world as it is, but he chose to do it this way as an instruction to us.
Yeah.
The heavens were established and perfected with discernment. Planets shine out in a certain way. The sun shines out in a certain way. There are constellations that travel in a certain way. And there's wisdom and these depths, which are all alluding to, hinting to, and sometimes just telling directly
you know, the divine providence was split with knowledge. I mean, there's a lower level of knowledge which is on the earth itself that human beings develop when we become wiser, hopefully, to make it a more livable place. And then there's wisdoms revealed to us above. Excuse me, in the form of prophecy, form of divine inspiration. So I'll turn to you, Dennis, your last idea of communicating to people, which might take it for granted that the earth itself has a certain wisdom which is rooted in divinity, divine plan. It wasn't just some sort of, no corporation can create the earth. No, I don't think there's ever going to be a time where humans will be able to create bodies called planets. Humans can make islands, they can make rivers, they can make dams, they can make all sorts of type of tributaries, but in terms of creating a mass that would move within the centrifugal force and all the different divine forces at play above, we can't do that. So if we recognize that the earth is a foundation for something, the development of awareness of godliness and fellowshipping and living as one family human experience, as you take on them as, where do we go with this to try to, you know, dialogue with people saying, did you ever realize the earth is a foundation in your, what are you doing with the foundation that you're stepping upon?
Life is good. Humans are good. Why can't people believe that? God created us. He created us for a purpose. We all have a plan, but we don't know what it is. But we follow what we believe our Creator wanted. What is wrong with that precept? There must be a commonality among all humans that we're here for a purpose. That purpose is for what our Creator put us here for, not what we individually believe we're here for. Baloney. Everybody thinks they all had a separate designation by God for their body and mind. Baloney. We were all created equal. We must be able to think as equals. If we can't, then we'll never, never get together. History has shown that we have a hard time burying our differences. For some reason or another, every time we think we bury our differences, they crop right back up and we start all over again. We just call it a different name. We cannot continue on like this. We must believe there's a commonality that all humans have, and it is God-given. Amen.
Rob, when's the last time we've heard conversations among other human beings, how the earth is a foundation, the heavens project out divine wisdom to us, whether we're aware of it or not, the depths of the earth contain within blessings? Why isn't this the mainstream of human dialogue?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. I can ask you that question this way. Your children, when they went to school, what is rudimentary school for young Jewish children? Is it the yeshiva, the entire name of the school system, or like, educate me on that? What is it called? Like, you know, first elementary school, middle school.
Those terms, middle school, intermediate school, or high school, it's kind of like dicing and slicing, which is basically the yeshiva experience, where the young child, whether boy or girl, are asked to be settled in their learning about the Creator and what is expected of us as Jewish people or as human beings, whatever you want to say.
Right.
That's right.
So
standing on one leg, me explaining what the word yeshiva means.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, so when the foundation is God, then the world becomes God, and when the foundation is world, the foundation becomes world. World and the understanding of world and God, and the understanding of what God is and what understanding of what God's world is different based on how you're taught, and it's based on that really constructs your perception of it. So if I go to school from the first grade or kindergarten and they say the most important thing to learn is ABCs and 1, 2, 3s and colors and shapes and sizes, and that's elementary school for, you know, a Gentile, right? And then you say, well, for a young Jewish child, the foundation is, who is God? What is the Torah? What does God expect of us? Who are we? What is my purpose? Why am I here? That's a different conversation. So when you ask why there can't be any communion and any meeting of the minds in terms of perspective, in a Buddhist household, it may be taught different. In an agnostic household, it may be taught different. So when you have those all, you have the same human race with different understandings being taught on the outset. So it makes it's clear why there can't be any real dialogue, because the perception from birth is completely different. The understanding is completely different. And so what's important is completely different. So as you grow, I mean, it's only reinforced. So you live in a society that says go to school, get a job, and take care of your family. It's not go to school, get an education, serve God, make the world a better place, tikkun olam. It's not the same thing. It's not make the world, repair the world, make the world better, do away with all with the wickedness of the past, make it better. This is God's earth. It's not our earth. People think that it belongs to them. They don't think this. The Bible said this is, you know, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. It's the Lord's earth. It's not our earth. We're sojourners. We're here for a time. But most like our grandparents and those before them, we're going to leave, at least in the physical sense. So we're not, we don't look at, we don't all view the world the same. We don't view the actual earth itself as a foundation, as a ripe and fertile ground to do God's will. We look at it as a way to monetize it. How much can we make if we go, you know, build houses over here? How much can we make if we put a shopping mall here? How much can we make if we put something on the beach? It's not about making the world better. It's about trying to find ways to make money off of it. And no part of that says God. None of that says God. In fact, you're not going to ask the developer, what's the God he thinks to build there? They won't have an answer for you, because that's not how they're taught, and that's not what they're doing. That's not the world. The world speaks world, and those of the spirit speak spirit. It's different languages happening. So you think that languages are Yiddish and Italian and French and German? And no, those are not. Those are constructs of communication. The language is spiritual, and there's different spiritual languages happening all day long. So when you think that you're having a physical war, you're having a spiritual war. That's the only war that's ever really happening. And the first war starts in the mind and the hearts of man. I'll say it one last time, and then I jump off. The first war starts in the heart and in the mind of man. That's where every war is continuing. Whether it be, and no matter what region of the world you go to, the war is inside the person, and it manifests on the land in real time. That's it. Those belief systems, the war is happening on the inside, the belief system happening on the inside, and then it just, somebody picks up a gun or picks up whatever they do, a bomb, it doesn't make a difference. It's on the inside. It's poor teaching or no teaching. I'll say it again. It's either poor teaching or no teaching. The poor teaching means that you give a perspective that does not line up with humanity, as Dennis says. It doesn't line up with longevity and divine, you know, providence. It has nothing to do with God. It has everything to do with the desires of man, to be popular, to be rich, to be whatever. But in the book of Revelation, it says, I know your struggles. I know that you're in poverty, but you are rich. So you have to know that you're born rich. So the money does not make you rich. By being a creation of God, by virtue of being created by God, you are rich. Let us make man in our image. We're all made in the image of God, like Dennis said. So we have a humanity problem. But if you're teaching it differently, what other problem could there possibly be? Nobody's on the same page. So you have the Jewish community here. You have the Christian community here. You have the Buddhist community here. You have the Zion, Jainism and the Zanism and the whoever. It's all different. 50 different religions and a billion people. I mean, how can there be a meeting of the minds? Where are we meeting? What are we talking about? If God is different to everybody, how can we serve God if we all serving him thinking that that's not God? That's God. That's not God. That's God. That's like playing a shell game. Nobody believes the same thing, so that's why there's chaos. That's it. I mean, and by the time we realize that we shouldn't have done it that way, we're all dead. So that's it.
Well, that is
become
the challenge.
A bunch of old men. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, we do see.
We don't have
I
enough.
Want,
yeah, yeah.
I
I'm
just
sorry,
want
go
to.
Ahead.
Is that Abraham, you know, all. I have to speak about Christianity and Islam, Judaic teaching. It was one who shown out mm-hmm. that there was one true God. And there are different, you know, there are different spectacles cognitively, spiritually, emotionally that people put on
But that's why we're having this dialogue. That's why we're on Facebook. That's why we're on Blog Talk Radio. Now, you know, today we cross-pollinated over into a TikTok chick-chock land, and hopefully we'll get people thinking. Listen, you mentioned you're 54, I'm 60.
Wow.
We're basically people who have seen a good chunk of life, and we want to see hopefully a lot more life.
Yeah.
We want to pass on this baton. And who knows, some youngster, 22, 25, 41, 43, is going to take the baton and become the next Dr. Martin Luther King, whether it be, you know, within the African-American community or the Asian community or within the Jewish community, or it could be, again, within the African-American community, the Arabic community. There are people who want answers, and there are people who are seeing the commonality,
right,
despite the differences. So I just want to end on that,
right,
Jim. I want to thank you for a fertile hour plus, and we're going to segue off into this speech by I Have a Dream speech by Dr. Martin Luther King. Before we do, I want to wish everyone a blessed week.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Havach, one love. Gor Lechad, one death. Remember, you've got a divine image. And if you've got a divine image, that should not leave you. That should not leave you in any shape or form disappointed. To know that you're anointed, that we can make this a world where there's no hatred, no jealousy, no competition, but you have to live it on the existential level in yourself. So here's this speech by Dr. King. Enjoy it, everyone. And for you in TikTok land, I hope the audio was sufficient. And for anyone, we should know, hopefully, God willing, next week, do the same type of programming. And the call number for anyone from TikTok TikTok land will be 563-999-3688 if you're in the Americas. Okay, everyone, let's enjoy this speech by Dr. Martin Luther King.
I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, J.R. Happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Shadow we stand today, signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Brotherhood. I have a dream that one day made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discourse of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. Country tears of thee, sweet land of liberty of the Archangels, land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside, let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true, so let freedom ring, from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring, from the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi. Gentiles